VOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
At this year's United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York, several leaders voiced their approval of reparations. They gave their support to a system of payments from countries with historical links to slavery and colonialism. Officials from South Africa, Cameroon, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, Cuba, and Malaysia urged the creation of a reparations system. But large countries like the United States, Britain, and Germany mainly did not comment about the issue. Philip J. Pierre is the Prime Minister of St. Lucia. He said, "Caribbean countries like ours, which were exploited and underdeveloped to finance the development of Europe, have put forward a case for reparations for slavery and native genocide." He added that he wanted the problem to be treated seriously and with urgency. But reparations payments have not been among the issues discussed by major world powers. U.S. President Joe Biden did not talk about reparations in his speech to the UN. But earlier this year, the Biden administration said it supported studying reparations for Black Americans. The office of the U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield, who is African American, did not comment on the recent reparations discussions to the Associated Press. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa did discuss the issue. He called the time of slavery one of the darkest periods in the history of humankind. Slavery in what would become the United States started more than 400 years ago in some of the British colonies. In the U.S., slavery was outlawed during the U.S. Civil War, which ended in 1865. The debate about reparations has continued for many years. It has not gained much interest in the past 30 years. However, reparations have gained support in some cities and local governments since the 2020 death of George Floyd, a Black man, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Carla Firstman is an international expert who studies reparations at the University of Essex in Britain. She said the UN talks are a big step forward for the reparations movement around the world. Reparations could come in many forms. There could be direct financial payments to individuals. Development aid could be offered to countries. Colonized land, art, and cultural objects could be returned. The correction of policies and laws that continue to discriminate could also be carried out. And apologies that include wiping away national heroes who are no longer in favor are other possibilities. One needs to be sensitive to what is important and how to best rectify, Firstman said. The latest discussions on reparations came as the UN honored the 2001 conference against racism in South Africa. It produced what is called the Durban Declaration. Last week, a UN group approved a resolution that said there had been some progress on the issue. But it also said there had been a rise in discrimination and violence towards people of African ancestry. Other groups facing mistreatment included refugees, the displaced, those with disabilities, the Roma in Europe, the young and the old. The resolution said there should be a way for descendants to seek fair reparation or satisfaction for any damage suffered. But the resolution stopped short of demanding that nations must pay reparations to countries their governments have harmed. The United States, Britain, and Germany were among several countries that did not attend the meeting honoring the Durban Declaration. The U.S. boycotted the meeting 20 years ago over the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Germany's president, in his General Assembly address, also did not talk about reparations. But Germany is one of the few countries that have offered to pay money to make up for its past actions. Earlier this year, Germany officially recognized the killing of tens of thousands of people in Namibia as genocide. It offered to provide 1.1 billion euros over 30 years for projects involving the people affected. But Germany did not call the payments reparations. I'm Dan Novak.
Facebook has put a hold on the development of a child version of its Instagram service. The move comes after major child advocacy groups and U.S. lawmakers urged Facebook to drop its launch plans for the new service, called Instagram Kids. The decision was announced in an online post by Instagram's chief, Adam Mosseri. Mosseri said company officials still stand by the need to develop the Instagram Kids experience. However, a delay in the project will give Instagram the chance to work with parents, experts, policymakers, and regulators on how it should move forward. Facebook announced plans for Instagram Kids in March. Instagram says the application is meant for children between the ages of 10 and 12. The company says while the service is designed for kids, it will contain tools for parents to supervise and control their child's experience. The reality is that kids are already online, Mosseri said in his online post. And we believe that developing age-appropriate experiences designed specifically for them is far better for parents than where we are today. He added that Instagram Kids aims to cut down on cases of children misrepresenting their age so they can download and use apps meant for people over age 13. Mosseri said kids will need to get parental permission to join the service, and it will not contain advertisements. Parents will be able to supervise the time their children spend on the app and control who they can message and follow. But the plans have faced opposition from child advocacy groups and some U.S. lawmakers. In May, a group of 44 U.S. attorneys general wrote to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. They urged him to cancel the project because it could harm children. The group warned the service could increase cyberbullying and help online predators reach children. It also accused Facebook of not taking necessary steps in the past to safeguard user privacy and protect children. Facebook faced similar criticism in 2017 when it launched the Messenger Kids app. The company said that service was designed as a way for children to communicate through the app with family members and friends approved by parents. Child development experts later urged the company to shut down Messenger Kids, but Facebook did not do so. Josh Golan is executive director of the online child advocacy group Fair Play. He called on Facebook in a statement to permanently end its plans to launch Instagram Kids. "We won't stop pressuring Facebook until they permanently pull the plug," Golan said. A group of Democratic members of Congress urged the same. Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey wrote for the group on Twitter that Facebook's latest decision showed the company had heard the calls to halt plans to launch Instagram Kids. He added, however, that the temporary delay is not enough. Facebook must completely abandon this project. Mosseri said while work is stopped on Instagram Kids, the company plans to expand its parental supervision tools to Instagram accounts of those 13 and older. He said more details on those tools will be shared in the coming months. I'm Brian Lynn.
Help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The Mexican-American War officially ended in 1848. Mexico agreed to give California and New Mexico to the United States. And Mexico would recognize the Rio Grande River as the southern border of Texas. Thus, President James K. Polk had succeeded in expanding the United States. He had added Oregon, California, Texas, and New Mexico to the country. Now the country faced the problem of what to do with slavery in the new territories.
As soon as it became clear in the American consciousness that Polk's aim in the Mexican War was to gain southwestern territory, California and what's now the American Southwest, then the slavery question becomes very, very salient in a powerful way that it had been kind of sort of kept under wraps for 20, 25 years.
Robert Merry is an historian and the author of a book about James K. Polk.
So we went through 10 years of kind of political hell in America as we struggled with that issue, which could only be settled through force of arms.
Southerners argued that they had the right to bring slaves into California and New Mexico. Northerners opposed any further spread of slavery. But the real question was a legal one. Did Congress have the power to control or ban slavery in the territories? While Congress debated the issue, the country moved quickly into the presidential campaign of 1848. President Polk was old, tired, and in poor health. He said he would keep his promise to serve only one term. Polk felt that he had done his duty. During the first days of his administration, he listed the goals of his presidency. First, he wanted to reduce the tax on imports. Second, he wished to establish an independent treasury, which the Whigs had voted out. Third, he hoped to settle the Oregon border dispute with Britain. And fourth, he wanted to make California part of the United States. Less than 4 years later, he had succeeded with each item on his list. The United States and Britain agreed on a compromise in the Oregon dispute. In 1846, Polk was able to establish the independent treasury again, where the government could keep its own funds. No longer would government money be kept in private banks. That same year, Polk was able to get Congress to approve a bill that greatly reduced the taxes on imports. And the peace treaty with Mexico gave the United States not only California, but also New Mexico. So the president believed he had served his country well. Polk, however, had not served his party well. He was not a good politician. He failed to unite competing groups within the Democratic Party. What was worse, he let them move even farther apart. There seemed to be no strong Democratic candidate who could unite the party. At one extreme were the supporters of former President Martin Van Buren. New York Democrats opposed to slavery. They were called barn burners. They got this name from their opponents, who claimed that they were willing to burn down the entire barn to remove pro-slavery rants. At the party's other extreme were the Democrats of the South, led by John C. Calhoun of South Carolina. In every state, the Democrats were divided between those who supported the Polk administration and those who opposed it. Democratic candidates met in Baltimore in May of 1848 to choose their candidate for president. On the fourth vote, the delegates chose Senator Lewis Cass of Michigan as the party's presidential candidate. Cass was 66 years old. He was considered a moderate Democrat. He was a Northerner who did not oppose slavery. On the question of slavery in the new territories, Cass believed that the people living in those areas should make the decision. The barn burner Democrats of New York refused to accept Cass as their candidate. They walked out of the Baltimore convention. Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky expected to be the presidential candidate of the Whig Party. The Whigs had nominated Clay as their candidate in three earlier elections, but Clay lost all three times. In 1848, older members of the party still supported him, but young Whigs felt a new candidate was needed. Some party leaders remembered how William Henry Harrison had won the presidency for the Whigs in 1840 by campaigning as a military hero. The country now had a new military hero, Old Zach, General Zachary Taylor. He and his men never lost a battle in the Mexican War. Several times, General Taylor defeated Mexican forces much larger than his. Taylor was 63 years old. He had almost no formal education. He had spent almost 40 years in the West as an Indian fighter and commander of small army bases. Some politicians did not believe Taylor had the ability to be president, but his supporters put great energy into their campaign. They tried to sell the idea that the general was the only man who could defeat the candidate of the Democratic Party. Finally, Taylor won the Whig Party's nomination. Many Americans did not like either presidential candidate because of the candidate's policies on slavery. Lewis Cass saw nothing wrong with slavery if that was what the people wanted. And Zachary Taylor was a slave owner. So a group of men in Ohio decided to form a new political party. They called it the Free Soil Party, because they believed in free land for free settlers. They wanted no further spread of slavery. The Free Soil leaders proposed a convention of all who supported their ideas. 10,000 people went to the convention in Buffalo, New York. For 2 days, the delegates debated the slavery issue and discussed their choice of a candidate for president. They also worked on a platform, a statement of their party's purpose. The platform declared that slavery was an institution of the states, not the nation. It said Congress had no right to help spread slavery by permitting it in the new Western territories. The platform declared that the issue should be faced with firmness. No more slave states. No more slave territory. No more compromises with slavery anywhere. Convention delegates then voted on candidates. They chose former President Martin Van Buren as the party's candidate. The people of the nation voted on November 7, 1848. It was the first time a presidential election was held on the same day in all parts of the country. Zachary Taylor won both the popular and electoral votes. He became the 12th president of the United States. Congress met a few weeks after the election, long before Taylor took office. It faced serious problems. Territorial governments were needed for the areas won in the war against Mexico. California especially needed help. Gold had been discovered in California. Thousands of people were moving there. A government was needed to protect the lives and property of the new population. Then there was the question of laws forcing northern states to return escaped slaves to their owners. The laws were not always obeyed. Southerners wanted a new law that would be easier to enforce. Congress found it difficult to act on these problems. The House of Representatives was controlled by members of the Free Soil Party, which opposed slavery. The Senate was controlled by Southerners who supported slavery. The two sides found it almost impossible to agree on anything. Early in January 1849, a congressman proposed a bill to first limit and then end slavery in the District of Columbia. Opposition to the bill was strong. It was amended. The new bill would simply close all places in the District of Columbia where slaves were bought and sold. Southern congressmen disliked the bill, even as amended. They organized a committee representing every one of the southern states. Senator John C. Calhoun said the committee should write a declaration explaining the position of the South. The committee agreed, and Calhoun wrote most of the declaration himself. The Southern Declaration accused the North of many aggressions. The South, it said, faced many dangers. Soon there would be enough free states to control both the House and the Senate. And then the Constitution would be changed and all slaves would be freed. And this, said the Southern Declaration, would lead to bitter hostility and war between North and South. The Declaration called on the people of the South to unite and be firm in their opposition to the North. With this new firmness, Southern lawmakers fought to make slavery legal in the new territories. They effectively blocked proposals for territorial governments in California and New Mexico. Congress ended its term on March 4, 1849, without any progress. Zachary Taylor was sworn in as president that same day. Americans hoped that the new president would be able to bring the North and South together again. But Taylor really had no policy. He could not support a bill to keep slavery out of the territories. That might start a quick revolt among the southern states. He could not support a bill to let slavery spread into the territories. That would make the North rise in anger. Taylor tried to be neutral. He hoped the problem of slavery would solve itself.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.